You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. Hello, I'm Tina Spindler, University of California Master Gardener, and I'm here today with Katrina Kirkby, also a Master Gardener, and we're wanting to welcome you to February in the Garden with UC Master Gardeners. Happy February, Katrina.
Happy February, Tina. What a fun month.
Oh, yes, it's spring.
It's spring.
I mean, people who aren't, you know, natives might not realize that February is spring in California.
Sometimes it feels like spring and sometimes not quite, but most of the times it's spring.
Yeah, it's spring if for no other reason we got a little bit of rain, and so our hills are green, so it looks like spring.
Here, I'll go with that.
Yeah, and it can sometimes be cold. And hopefully we'll get more rain, because we never get enough rain, hardly ever. So, but in the garden, as far as chores go, in California, February and March are our times to really plant and get ready for the warm season, like you do in springtime.
Yes, you know, springtime's different times in all over the country, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and it's the dead of winter elsewhere. But here, I consider it springtime, because we really only have two seasons. We have, you know, the warm season and the cool season in California. And this is still the cool season until March. That's when we switch over and start planting for warm season plants. But we are going to be getting ready, and with the rain, we're going to start seeing lots of new growth. And so I just love February, because it is the beginning of new life in the garden.
Indeed. And you know, I also like it because of the weather. It's not so hot in the garden. You can go out any time of the day and garden versus early in the morning, late in the afternoon.
Yes, I agree. I was out today finishing up pruning some roses, which I guess we'll talk about that first since I mentioned it. If you didn't get your roses pruned last month, which is when we were encouraging everyone to do it, still do it in the beginning of February. It's better than not pruning your roses at all. And just to refresh everybody's memory, the reason we do that in California, even though our roses don't ever really go dormant, by pruning them, we force them into a dormancy. And we also clean off all of that dead and diseased branches. Oh my gosh, the rust that I had on these iceberg roses today when I was pruning them, it was a good thing I was taking them down to just the bare canes, because there was rust on every single leaf on those roses.
Now, Tina, you talk about roses and pruning them. Could you just give a little update and tell people who haven't pruned them before a little bit about how to take care of the leaf litter and...
Sure. Yeah, just a quickie. We spent a fair amount of time on it. And we do have another show in our vault. So if you want specifics on rose pruning, you can go to the University of California University of California Master Gardener website, and there is a radio show that specifically talks about rose pruning.
And Google, when you do it, you can Google, make sure it's Orange County, California, because there's many Orange counties in the United States,
like Florida. So we don't want you to go to Florida.
And New York.
But anyway, to prune your roses, three quick steps. You want to cut out any canes. Those are what branches are called on a rose bush. You want to cut out any canes that cross themselves into the middle of the bush. So just that's easy. Look for any branch that's growing into the center of the bush and just cut that off. Then you want to look at the remaining canes that are all pointing outward, and you want to find a five-leaf leaflet that is pointing outward, because that's a growth node, and you want to cut right above that. And the goal is to leave about 3 to 5, maybe 7 max canes or branches. And you want the center of your rose bush to not have any branches pointing to the center. So picture a beach ball, and if you were taking a beach ball, you could put it in the center of that bush, and the canes that are facing out would act like little arms to hold up that beach ball. Or another way to think about it is a vase. You want it to be in a vase shape. And then the most important part is you want to take off all the leaves, if you've left any leaves on, and you want to rake up all of that leaf litter. So like today, because mine had so much rust, which is a fungal disease, and it's on the underside of the leaf, and it looks like orange powder, you want to rake all of that debris up and throw it away. You don't want to compost it. You want to get that those fungal spores in the trash away. And then the final step is to spray that rose bush with an antifungal spray or a horticultural oil. And if you don't know what those are, you can go to a nursery and they will be happy to help you find a good spray for your roses. That's called dormant spraying. And when you do that, it eliminates, well, it doesn't eliminate, but it cuts down on fungal diseases immensely. And then for your roses, as long as we're talking about roses, we'll finish up. If you pruned your roses in January, towards the end of February, they're going to be having some new growth on them. And once you see that new growth, then it's time to feed them. So go ahead, if you're going to the store to get that fungal spray or horticultural oil, the other thing that you should get at the same time, if you don't already have it, is rose food or a flower food. That fertilizer, that type of fertilizer, will have a nutrient in it that is promoting blooms. Just to refresh everyone's memory, fertilizers have three main nutrients: nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And on each bag or box of fertilizer, you're going to see three numbers, like 4, 6, 3. And you want to get one that has a higher middle number when you're fertilizing anything that has flowers or fruit, because it's that middle number, that middle nutrient, phosphorus, that encourages fruit and flowers.
Exciting.
Yeah. So that's all I have to say about roses. Did I leave anything out?
I think you did it, my dear.
Okay, cool.
Where would you like to go now?
Well, since we're in the flower garden, let's talk about the flower garden.
Oh, she's smiling again.
Yeah. So while I was out in my flower garden, I don't just plant roses in a rose bed all by themselves. I like to plant other things. And so I have Santa Barbara daisy, and I have some status, and some bulbs, and some lantana, and, you know, things like, and lavender. And so while I'm out there pruning the roses, I make it a point to go ahead and trim all of those perennials, because February is a great month to clean up your perennial plants. Those are the ones that last more than a year. And they tend to get, you know, maybe overgrown, or like the Santa Barbara daisy gets kind of straggly. So I just pull it all up and give it a nice haircut. But if you don't have a rose bed or you haven't attended to your perennials yet, February is a great time to do that. I think you do a lot of that in February.
I do a lot. You know, the reason why I do it in February, I have something called a plumbago, which is a large bushy plant, and it grows. I have a whole wall of it, or a whole line of it, going down the side of my property, and it gets big, and I used to cut it back in the fall. And for all fall and winter, I had this ugly, stubby stuff. And it, all of a sudden in February, it starts growing again. So I remember many years ago, I switched to cutting the heck out of it in February. I just cut this thing back. It could be 5 feet tall, and I cut it down to 2 feet.
Oh, wow.
And I really cut it back, because it loves where it's at, and it just grows. And when I cut these plants back in February, I have the least amount of downtime. You know, the soil's warmer, things are going to be growing, the days are getting longer, and I'd much rather cut them back at that point in time, because the growth is going to happen sooner.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And that's one of the reasons February, and also March, but February is even better, because if you wait until March and we have a warm February, there will be a lot of new growth. Whereas if you do it in February, right before the days get longer and warmer, then all of that new growth just goes crazy.
It goes crazy. And, you know, sometimes you could time it. Like, I'm having company for Valentine's weekend.
Ah.
And my plumbagos are pretty, and everything out there is really pretty. Well, my gardener likes to chop things down. So the Thursday after they leave, I let him. It's the only time I let him have anything electrical in the yard because he likes to butcher things.
Yeah.
And I let him go with that, and I just cut everything back. And it's a short. It seems like it's the shortest period of time where things don't look that pretty.
Yeah. No, that's a great idea.
And then I time it after parties and after get-togethers. And a lot of times I'll do it at the beginning of February. But since I'm having company for, you know, the week, you know, for a week, I want my garden kind of look pretty. But as soon as they leave,
yeah,
everything's going to get whacked.
Then it's time. Yeah, for sure. And then to finish up in the flower garden, this really isn't a month to plant new annuals, because we're going to be switching to warm season annuals in March. So I just deadhead the annuals that I have, you know, the snapdragons, the stock, calendula, you know, anything that you planted, you know, last October is probably still blooming and looking great. So just deadhead it. Clean it up. Maybe give it a little shot of some liquid fertilizer, you know, to keep the bloom coming. And wait until March to do any, you know, new plantings of warm season stuff like cosmos and marigolds and petunias, you know, those things that like the warmer weather will start appearing in the nursery in March. And then you can take out any of your cool season stuff that isn't looking so good. Although often the cool season stuff lasts for me into May. So I kind of play it by ear and leave the stuff that looks good and take out the stuff that doesn't. But what you can plant, especially towards the end of the month, the nurseries will start receiving their shipments of new perennials. And so just, you know, if you're like me and you head to the nursery, you know, every other week or so, just keep an eye out for what they're getting, because it'll start showing up usually towards the end of February. And if you've got some empty spaces, go ahead and plant those perennials. We talked about planting perennials in the fall, October and November, which is great to do because then they benefit from all the winter rains, and then in the springtime they just go nuts. But if you didn't get around to doing it, or if you just see new stuff that you'd really like to have in February, the spring is the second best time to plant a lot of perennials. So go for it. Also, if you did, as we encouraged people to do last fall, if you did plant bulbs like daffodils and Dutch iris and freesias, you'll be seeing all of those blooming this month. Ranunculus will be a little bit later. But oh my gosh, it is truly my favorite month in the garden from a flower standpoint, because all the bulbs start blooming, and some of them will go into March and April, but you know, it seems like in my yard anyway, where I live, the bulk of them bloom in February, and it's just stunning. And if you have daffodils that, you know, stay and come back every year, and some Dutch iris, I didn't even have to do anything, you know, they just come. And it's just so rewarding.
I actually have some bulbs coming up now, and it's wonderful. It's just it's a sweet present. You've taught me this, Tina. It's like you plant it, and you forget about it, and all of a sudden you walk outside, and you haven't done any work, and there's this gift.
It is. I had my first daffodils blooming in the end of January. Well, I was like, whoa, that's cool, you know, to have those bright little yellow. They were, I forget which variety, but they were yellow with little orange centers. And you know, you don't like you said, you don't expect to see them, and they just make you smile when you go out there.
I like it because there's no work.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's a present, like a busy day, you're running by, and all of a sudden it catches your eye, and you go, wow, I didn't have to do anything, and there it is.
Yeah, it's just amazing. The other two things that are good to plant this month, because they're in bloom, I think we mentioned camellias last month in January, because the Japonica camellias bloom in January and February, and so that's the best time to purchase them because they're just green shrubs when they're not blooming. So if you really want to see what you're getting, purchase them and plant them in, well, January's already passed, but in January and February, because you'll get to see what flower you're getting. And of course you're going to want one that's, you know, giant and your favorite color, and they're just so fun. I love camellias.
There's so many to choose from.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can make a project just going to an event, just going looking at camellias.
Well, you can, and that's a good time for us to suggest going to botanical gardens in the area. Sadly, we don't have any in Orange County. We do have lovely Sherman Gardens, and they do have some camellias. And we are hoping to have a botanical garden at the Gray Park in the future. But until that's there, head up to LA, and Huntington Library and Gardens and Descanso will have beautiful, beautiful camellia displays this time of year.
And they're huge and gorgeous. Oh, they're old.
They're, gosh, some of them are 8 feet tall or more,
or
right?
Or more.
Yeah. So unlike the poor little ones in my yard that are struggling to be 4 feet tall, the ones up there are just stunning.
Yeah, stunning.
So go up there and you'll see camellias in bloom.
You know, another nice place is Rogers Gardens, if you just want to go look at...
Oh, to buy them.
To buy them.
They have a great selection.
They have a great selection.
Yeah.
And just to go, you could just go peruse through them and get some ideas.
Right, and you'll see the names and you know.
And what do you like? You know, it's like, what color do you want? What size do you want? There's so many different choices.
There's reds, there's pinks, there's whites. They're just beautiful. And then the last thing I'll mention that's good to plant this time, well, maybe not the last, but almost the last thing that's good to plant now. Do you have clivia? It might be too hot by you in your yard.
I have almost like this shade deck where kind of protected.
Uh-huh.
And I have one.
Well, you do. Okay. So I have clivia on the shady side of my house. And the great thing about clivia is it needs no care. It's totally bulletproof. You plant it once and you ignore it. I've had mine for 15 years. And they multiply, so you can dig them up and divide them and put them elsewhere. And this is a great time, February, to buy them because they bloom in February. And the most common is an orange variety, but there are yellow and creamy varieties now as well. So buy those while they're in bloom so you can get the ones that you want.
And they really are easy. When you said that, I'm like, wow, you know, I don't do anything with them at all.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is if you're a patio gardener, if you don't have in-ground gardening space, they're great in pots. And they're just lovely green foliage most of the year, but then in this time of year they produce these stunning waxy flowers. So if you just want to grow them in pots, you can do that as well. And then just a couple last thing, a couple of flowers to plant. I love gerberas. Do you plant gerberas?
I love them.
Yes. And those are great to plant now through April. And some of the newer varieties bloom kind of more frequently. I have one that our fellow master gardener Kay Havens gave me a few years ago that just keeps going and going. I swear the thing blooms like 10 months out of the year.
Really?
Except that I can't remember the name of it, so I'm sorry. But look for request like newer varieties of them. Do you say gerbera or gerbera?
Both,
yeah.
I don't know which
anyway,
is correct.
Ask for one of those or both of them and ask for the newer, freer flowering varieties because they just will bloom and bloom and bloom. And I actually love growing them in pots because they don't wilt that easily. And even when they do wilt, if I forget to water my pots, which I frequently do in the heat of the summer, even if they start to wilt, when you water them, they come right back.
Isn't that amazing?
They're
forgiving.
Yeah, they're very
to
forgiving.
To extent.
Yeah. Yep, yep. And then last thing I'll mention, because you know me and bulbs, I always have to mention bulbs, plant gladioli. You can start planting them in early February, and then I always recommend planting them every 2 weeks or every week in different parts of your garden so that you have a, you know, successive bloom over the summer. So you can plant them in February and March, and then you stop planting them, and then, of course, they'll bloom in late spring and summer.
Do your glads, do you plant them by seed, or do you plant
them? No, glads are a bulb.
Yeah. Excuse me. That's right.
Glad. Yeah, glads are a bulb.
Thinking?
Yeah, no worries. And there are shorter glads, but personally, because I love tall things, I just skip the traditional ones that, you know, when they bloom, they're like 4 and 5 feet tall. And you just plant them in between. I like to plant them kind of in between or behind rose bushes. And, you know, then you have, again, these surprises that
pop up.
That pop up, and they're tall and beautiful.
Now, are you able to find those tall ones at stores, or do you order on the internet?
No, pretty much even big box retailers have bags of gladiolus.
The tall ones.
Yeah. The common, the old-fashioned common ones are pretty tall. They, you know, when they bloom, they're at least 4 feet tall. So, yeah. And depending on where you plant them or the variety, they can be even taller. So, and they make stunning bouquets. Oh, my gosh. And they multiply as well. So I have, I don't know, 100 or more glads in my garden. And it's, you know, you pick six of those bloom stalks and you've got a stunning, you know, 3 foot tall bouquet. So that's why florists use them, you know, in those big church, you know, arrangements. Yeah, they're
quite
stunning. They are. You know, one doesn't cut it. You know, it looks kind of silly, but...
3, 5, 7.
Yeah, if you can manage to get a few blooming at the same time, it's pretty fun. And I always pick them. This is just a tip. I pick them when the first two flowers bloom at the bottom of the stalk because they bloom up the stalk sequentially. And when the bottom ones are done, you just break them off and then your stalk just keeps on blooming up the top. So that way, you know, you've got a blooming bouquet in your house for over a week.
It's wonderful. And they're also nice because they're so tall, you can put them on the back of things.
Yes. You can fill them, you know, like if I have other things blooming, you know, Shasta daisies or something else, you know, you can make a mixed bouquet with them. It doesn't have to just be glads. So, yeah, they're fun. They're fun and easy.
Fun and easy.
Fun and easy. Okay, so we talked about roses and the rest of the flowers. Let's talk about how about drought-tolerant, California-friendly stuff.
I think that's a great idea.
Because this is one of my favorite months to plant that stuff. You know, we suggest that you start doing it in the fall, you know, October, November. We're all too busy to do it in December, but December is a great month too. January, if it's not raining, also a great month. But because I'm in the planting mood in February, I often add some more, you know, drought-tolerant stuff in my sections of the garden that have that plant palette. And because they still have February, March, April, and May to get settled in before the weather gets real hot. You can continue planting them up till April, but I don't like to plant them that late because, you know, if we start getting heat waves in May, then the poor little guys are going to struggle. So.
You know, it's so funny when people think about drought tolerant. They go, oh, we'll plant it in the summertime, if you don't know. But, you know, they got little root systems, and they need water, and it's hard for them, and it's hot, and it's a struggle. So plant them now.
Yeah, think about it. Look at our hills, our native hills and native meadows, and when are they growing and looking the best? Right now. Right now. And that's because it's not too hot. They have an adequate supply of moisture. But what do they look like come July? Pretty awful, you know, because, you know, they actually, a lot of natives go dormant in July, August, and September because they don't have water, so they just kind of shut down. So it's a good thing to remember when you're planting drought-tolerant stuff that they want to be planted in the cooler, wetter time, because that's when they grow the most vigorously. And then let them get settled in, and then by summer, their first year or two, give them a little bit of water, because they're not that drought tolerant yet. They're babies. And then after that, they should be able to hang in there when the weather
is
hot.
Go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, go ahead and plant those. A great... well, of course, there's lots of great books, but one of Katrina and my favorite places to go find out about what to plant is on our water district websites. Mm-hmm. A lot of the water districts, mine, Irvine Ranch Water District, where I live, has some great information about the types of plants and also links to other websites.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these sites are just IRWD, I think, Irvine Water District. It has a wonderful site.
Yes.
And it's a good place to start, and sometimes it's a good place to finish. You know?
Yes, absolutely.
Just really.
Yeah, so...
And I don't know about everybody else's water bill, but I went to go to IRWD, and those top levels are really getting really expensive.
Oh, super expensive. It makes so much... We all have to learn how to operate our sprinkler systems, because otherwise you're just going to pay through the nose for watering too much.
And smart watering, we also have to look at, you know, how much has it been raining this last year, you know, in the last couple months. So pay attention to your sprinklers, too. You know, if it's raining or if it's going to start raining, do you really want your water on?
Yeah.
So that's something you're going to hear over and over with from us is be aware of your watering system.
Yes, for sure.
It drives me crazy when I see it raining and sprinklers are on. It's like I just want to knock on people's door and go, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? It's expensive. They don't need it when it's raining.
No, they don't. Yeah. And especially if we're getting some rain, you know, really pay attention to that. And there'll be time enough for us to use our irrigation systems. But, you know, right now, let's take advantage of whatever rain we get. And speaking of rain, in February, if you hear that we're going to have some rain, that's a great time to go out and fertilize.
Yes.
Yeah. Because there's nothing like a good, you know, our sprinkler systems, you know, do the job that we need them to do. But often, depending on the amount of rain we get from the natural rainfall, we get a lot more penetration of the rain, of the water. And we also get that natural rain to wash the salts that accumulate in our soils out. So I like to, if I hear it's going to rain, and I haven't fertilized to try and do it, you know, the day before we're going to get rain, because in February it's the time to start fertilizing pretty much, you know, everything. Maybe not the tropicals yet, you know, but the perennials, your fruit trees for sure. Your fruit trees are going to start getting those, the deciduous fruit trees, oh, the beautiful apples and peaches and plums and pears, are going to get those beautiful blossoms that we just look forward to every year. And, of course, that means we'll get fruit, too. But in order for those to have the best success at flowering and producing fruit, they could use some food. So February is a great time to fertilize all of those fruit trees. And then, of course, your decorative trees and shrubs also.
Oh, how exciting.
It
I was just
is.
Thinking about all the fruit trees in bloom. Isn't that good? Oh, I love that time of year.
It's just so
stunning.
Awesome.
All the different colors of the fruit trees. Oh.
Yeah, oh. If you get, you know, those peach trees that have those beautiful pink blossoms and, you know, apricot trees that have the pale pink and the plums that have those beautiful white blossoms. Yeah, it's pretty fun. But yeah, look, and again, as I mentioned for the roses, the simple thing to do is to go to a nursery and ask for fertilizer for fruit trees. But again, just remember, if you're looking at the three numbers that represent the nutrients on the bag, make sure when you're getting the one for fruit trees that you get one that has a higher middle number, higher phosphorus number, so that it can have the nutrients there for your...
It'll produce.
Yes, it'll produce. And just a little tip on how to fertilize a fruit tree. So don't do like my husband does and dump the fertilizer next to the trunk, because the trunk is not where the feeder roots are. So the feeder roots are what bring water and nutrients into that tree and or shrub. And those extend about 18 inches out from the drip line of the tree. And the drip line is, look at the head of the foliage of your tree, and if it was raining, where the leaves would drip at the periphery of that head of the tree, that's called the drip line. So as far out, if your branches extend, you know, 5 feet out, the drip line is 5 feet out from the trunk. And of course, I'm doing
the hand
motions, which no one can see because it's radio. But so you want to fertilize at the drip line and extending out about 18 inches, because that's where your feeder roots are most active. And so what I like to do is scratch the soil just very lightly on the surface right around there, and then sprinkle, read the directions. The fertilizer package will usually say for every inch of diameter of your trunk, you should have, you know, so many, you know, 1 cup for each inch of diameter or height of the tree. So fertilizers will describe it differently, and they're different strengths. So you have to read the package directions.
Always read the directions.
Always, always.
Always, always. There's a reason why, and this is one of the ones you follow. It's like in baking. You want to follow the directions.
Yeah. Don't put four tablespoons of something if it wants 2 teaspoons of something. So same way here. And then, so say you're going to need 2 cups of fertilizer, then just gently sprinkle it all the way around that drip line area that we talked about, and try and do it, you know, fairly evenly, not so that it all ends up on one side of the tree. And then again, just try and work that fertilizer gently into the soil, mix it into the surface of the soil, but you don't want to disturb the roots, so you're just basically scratching the surface a little bit so that it gets in there. And then that's the best time to mulch, because then you can put a couple, 3-4 inches of mulch on top, and then, of course, water it in really well so that it gets down in that root area. And right now, I need to let you know that you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, you can go to kuci.org. So, yes, be sure you fertilize your fruit trees as well as any vining fruit that you have.
And it's really going to pay off. It really, you know, if you're spending all this time taking care of your fruit trees and spending money on water and everything else, you might as well fertilize them so you have a nice bumper crop.
Yes. You know? Oh, but that's, I mean, gosh, we wait all year for those, you know, fruit to...
And it's amazing. We've forgotten before, you know, a long time ago, we forgot to fertilize, and it really makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
You don't think about it. It's like, oh, they grow in the wild, but no, they really don't.
Yes.
You know?
So it really will help them a lot if you give them a little bit of food. And fruit trees aren't the only thing. Pretty much everything in your garden is going to want food this month and next. But don't forget your blueberries. If you have blueberries, good time to start feeding them as well. They're going to want what's called an acidic food because they like acid soil in the native realm where they grow wild. They grow in soil that's acidic, which is why we grow them in pots here, because our soil is not acidic. And so if you've ever planted blueberry shrubs in the ground like I have, they end up dying. So they do much better when you plant them in pots, but they do need to be fertilized with an acid food.
And you know, if you don't like, you could always sink your pot into the ground too if you want to. You know,
yes, you can.
Up to you, but
right. And when I say acidic, you can go to the nursery and ask for a fertilizer that is acidic, and they might actually give you one that says azalea camellia fertilizer on it, because azaleas and camellias like acid fertilizer too. So. And, of course, the other trees that you want to fertilize would be avocados, if you're lucky enough to have an avocado.
Oh, avocado. We just planted another one. I'm so excited.
I need to plant one. Maybe I'll do that this month. I'm embarrassed to say, but I think I've killed 2. But I discovered I planted them. They don't like wind, and I kept wanting to plant them on the side of my house that gets the most wind, because that was where I had the room. And I finally figured out, I finally read somewhere that they don't like wind that
much. They can survive. I mean, we have a large one that we have to keep cutting back, and it's right in the wind, because our whole backyard is in the wind.
Is open, yeah.
The whole backyard is open, and it survived.
Maybe it was just me.
You know, maybe we're just lucky. I don't know, but that thing was the first tree we planted when we moved into our house. Yeah, and it's still going.
Oh, good for you. Well, I'm going to try it, I think, in another area this time, since I haven't had good luck. And the other thing to fertilize, I already mentioned roses. Fertilize those. But if you have fuchsias, February is a good time to fertilize those. And also, I didn't mention it when we were talking about flowers. I should have. But this is the time of year to prune back your fuchsias gently. You don't want to prune them like you do roses, you know, where you cut them down to sticks. But your fuchsias can get pretty straggly. I don't think you grow them because it's too hot.
It's
where
too
you
hot.
Live.
I live a bit farther in the hills.
Yeah. I grow a couple that are that do okay in the heat because I'm closer to the ocean than you. But I love the folks who live right on the ocean because they can grow all of them.
I tried. You know, yeah. I've tried. And it's like, how many times do you try and just realize it just doesn't work?
Right.
You
exactly.
know, there's other things that'll grow where I live. But I love fuchsias and I love going where people can grow them. They're beautiful.
They are. Every time I go down to Weedner's Nursery, you know, in Carlsbad, and they are loaded, you know, because they're right next to the ocean there, and they're just loaded with fuchsias, and I have to just slap my hands and say, no, you can't buy a whole carload full. You may have one, because you don't know if it will survive.
I've even given up with one. I've tried all over my yard, and I love them so much, but I'm like,
I'll give people a hint. It might not work where you are, because you're further inland, but I'm in Irvine, so it does get warm here, but where I'm growing mine now is under a sycamore tree.
I saw that. It's beautiful.
In pots. So that's how I solved my dilemma for keeping fuchsias alive, is I planted them in pots, and I put them under the sycamore tree so they only get filtered light. And they seem to like it there. But even in pots, they still get rangy. And mm-hmm. so in February, you want to gently prune them, and then what you can do with fuchsias as they grow is a month from now, I'll go out and tip prune. Have you ever tip pruned, Katrina? So tip pruning is just when you get the new growth, you just pinch off the tip
yes,
of it.
Yes.
Or it's also called pinching mm-hmm. or tip pruning.
So it makes everything else thicker.
Exactly. And the reason you want to do that with fuchsias is they send flowers out on new growth. So by tip pruning, you're forcing them to have more new growth, which means you're going to get more flowers. So that ends up giving you a lot fuller, more bloomy fuchsia. So yeah, fuchsia's a good time to fertilize and pinch them back. And then since we're talking about fertilizer, we can segue into lawns, and then we'll go back to vegetables. But it is time to fertilize cool season lawns. You fertilize those in the cool season, which is like from November until, you know, May-ish. And then we don't fertilize them when it's super hot, like July, August, and September. So go ahead and fertilize your cool season lawn this month. And then the other thing you should do with your lawn is if you had trouble with crabgrass last year, there's a pre-emergent that you can put on your lawn in February, the first part of February. It's pretty time critical. You're trying to do it before those crabgrass seeds germinate. And so, again, go to a good nursery and ask for a pre-emergent for crabgrass. And if you put that down on your lawn, sprinkle that on your lawn, then you'll have way less crabgrass.
We just did that.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. We talked about it last month.
Yeah.
And I wrote my list down.
Good for you.
Like, follow your own advice, Katrina.
Yeah. I still haven't gotten mine yet, so I have to go do that quickly. And then for your warm season lawns, like St. Augustine and others, February is a good time to de-thatch your warm season lawn, and that requires a machine that you can rent, a dethatching machine, or you can tell your gardener that you want to dethatch it. You can kind of tell if you need it, because where you do the edge trimming up against a sidewalk or a driveway, you can see that although it's green on the top inch, there might be 3 inches of kind of brown.
And we've all seen that.
Yeah, we've all seen that.
It's not so pretty.
No. And when you dethatch, it looks terrible. It looks like you've killed the whole lawn because basically it has these kind of blades that are like fingers that go through.
And kind of pulls it up.
Pull it up and cut it. And
like a bad hairdo.
Yeah, exactly.
Or haircut.
Right. So for a few weeks, it'll look like you just destroyed the lawn, but then it'll be so excited and happy because it'll throw out tons of new growth and it'll look really pretty after the warmer weather comes. So Yeah.
Exciting.
Exciting. Anything else you can think of for lawns? I think that's all I can think of for lawns. Yeah, there is a little bit to do for lawns. This is a lawn kind of month.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what I forgot. For the cool season lawns, aerating. I forgot to mention.
Oh, yes, aerating. Aerating is a wonderful thing to do. And it just, we don't think about it, but it's, well, Tina, would you explain a little bit about aerating?
Yeah, basically what it is you're taking plugs, you're poking holes and taking soil plugs out of the soil where your lawn is. If you have a small lawn, you can do it by hand. There's just a device that has a handle on it and a kind of like a shovel, but down by your feet, it spreads out into a horizontal piece of metal that has two tubes at either end. And when you step on it, it pushes those tubes into the ground where they take a core of soil out. And then
they're kind of like big straw. They look like big straws in a way.
Yeah.
You know, it's
a
big straw. And you're putting it into the ground and you're making holes in the ground so the water could get to it. And yes.
It is, because we have, in most of Southern California, a lot of clay soil, and the clay soil gets compacted, and so it's tough for water and air to get down to the root zone. So by taking those cores of soil out, you're now opening it up, letting air get down there, the water can get down there, and then when you fertilize and water, the fertilizer gets down into the root zone and is a lot more effective. So it is a good idea. I will try to do that as well as putting the pre-emergent down in February, and once I do the pre-emergent and the aerating and fertilizing, then come, you know, April, May, that lawn is just going to look like
stunning.
Yes, it'll look fake. It'll be so beautiful.
You know, sometimes when people have the most perfect lawns, they look like they're doing nothing, but it takes a lot of work to make it look really simple and really good.
It does, and the other reason that you want to do this is because it makes your lawn healthy, so that in the summertime, because Katrina and I do like to have a little bit of lawn, and we know that they're water thirsty, but by taking care of it and doing these things now, we'll be able to do it with a lot less water over the summer, because we've opened up that soil, the water can get down to the roots where it's needed, we've fertilized, so they're nice and strong and healthy, and if they get stressed by heat and not totally enough water, they'll be strong enough to live. Might turn brown, but it'll come back. So it's a good preventive thing for the summer also.
So we're actually feeding both the warm season and the cool season lawns.
Well, warm season, no. We're going to wait. We're going to dethatch warm season this month, and then we're going to wait till March to do the fertilizing, because it's that they like the warmer. It wouldn't hurt anything if you did it this month, but they start actively growing more in March. So
more bang for your buck.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about veggies.
Veggies.
Yes. Things to eat. We already talked about the fruity things to eat, and how we're going to fertilize those trees and shrubs and vines. And for the rest of our veggies, we're going to continue this month to keep planting, if we have space, the cool season veggies, because it's too cold to plant warm season veggies like tomatoes and squash and beans and peppers. We don't do that until March. I personally, in the past, because I'm always chomping at the bit for tomatoes, have tried putting tomatoes in mid-February, and Mother Nature always seems to send a frost.
And if it doesn't seem a frost, I know if I plant a tomato plant in February and I plant the same one in March, and if it doesn't frost and it's still in the ground from February to March, by April and May they're still the same size.
Isn't that true?
Yes, I really don't. That month does not really give you anything. Even though I get so excited about planting it, and I have to pull the reins in because I'm like, I want tomatoes. But I might as well let my winter garden go a little bit longer, because right now it's like, I don't know about you, but the kale, I'm just like, I'm eating kale every day and broccoli and cauliflower, and it's just absolutely yummy.
Yeah, I haven't bought any greens at the market since late November.
Yeah.
I've been just harvesting from the garden, and I love it because you just go out and make a mixed salad. And so I am this week going to sow new cool season lettuce in particular, and probably another batch of peas and another batch of carrots, just because I love having them. And like you said, you might as well wait until March before you put in those warm season things, because the cool season ones are just so yummy.
Yummy. And if you know, we do a lot of successive planting, and I love that. I mean, we've just been getting broccoli and cauliflower and broccoli and cabbage, and it's just so nice. And you know, when you get like, people don't know, when you have a fresh head of like cauliflower, how tender it is and how moist it is. And when you get a fresh head, homegrown broccoli, you know, you buy broccoli in the stores, you have to cut off the stems or, you know, strip them down. Well, I tell you, my favorite part of broccoli is now the stems, because it's so tender and juicy. And it's like I have a completely different relationship with
with broccoli.
With broccoli. We were back east about 15 years ago, and there was a vegetable stand. And they had, my husband wanted to buy some cauliflower, and I really wasn't into cauliflower. And I'm like, well, whatever, you could eat the cauliflower. We ate that whole head of cauliflower in the car because it was so good. You know, we just rinsed it off, broke it apart. You can't do that with stuff you buy in the store.
Aww.
You know, it's just, you can't. So just keep planting. And, you know, we had a little extra, and we gave some to our neighbors. And, you know, now they're planting a vegetable garden because of the vegetables we gave them. Because they didn't know you could have vegetables that tasted that good.
Isn't that so sweet?
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
Isn't that good? So, oh, yeah. I love winter vegetables.
I do too, and I think one of the reasons I love them is it's so pleasant to work in the garden this time of year. Whereas, as much as I love the tomatoes, you know, to work in the garden in July, it has to be early in the morning, or it's just, you know, too hot. So that's the other reason I love the winter veggie garden, is because I just love being out there.
You could be out there all during the day. I know in the summertime it's like early morning or late afternoon, and it's usually early morning for us, you know. Oh, the sun's coming up. I live farther inland, so it gets a bit warmer. Oh, the sun's coming up. Let's work for an hour or whatever before it gets too warm.
Yeah.
But right now you can go out any time of day, and it's any time on the weekend, during the weekday, whatever your schedule is, you can go out and be in your garden.
It is. I love winter gardening. It's because it's Southern California, and we get that beautiful sun in the winter. You might have to wear a vest or, you know, a long sleeve shirt to stay warm. But
so many times in the winter, the clouds are beautiful, and you can hear the birds are singing, and it's like kumbaya out in the yard.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a couple other things though. While we're waiting for next month to plant the warm season veggies, like as we said, you can certainly plant more cool season veggies, but there are a couple of things that you do definitely want to plant right now, one of which is bare root asparagus. If you're going to plant asparagus, you have to find a spot where you're going to want it to stay for a number of years, because asparagus is a perennial, and the part of the asparagus that we eat is actually the new stem. We don't let it mature, because what happens when it matures is it turns into asparagus fern. And I, you know, had worked for years at Centennial Farm, that always, which is at the Orange County Fairgrounds, and I would tour kindergartners. And one of my favorite things to show them was asparagus growing, because it looks so weird. It's just like fingers popping up out of the ground. And, you know, I'd say to the kids, you know, what is that? And they'd say, I don't know, it looks like fingers. And then you would break one off and say, see, it's an asparagus. And, of course, a lot of the kids didn't like asparagus, but it was one of those, you know, plants that is kind of odd when you...
It is a weird-looking plant.
Yeah, it is a weird-looking plant. But you do want to plant them bare root this month, and then this year you probably won't get that many. And even if you do, you don't want to harvest every single asparagus sprout that comes up, because you need to let some of them turn into that asparagus fern, because that's how the plant will make its food for the next year. So if you are going to plant asparagus, probably a 2 foot wide by, 6 foot bed is a good size. Of course, you can go longer. I once had a 10 foot bed that was lovely, 2 feet wide and 10 feet long. And you want to dig the soil, and till it and add amendment and fertilizer. And then when you plant them bare root, you don't want to bury it so that it's completely, under several inches of soil. What you do is you bury it in steps. So you cover it, you let it grow, you cover it, you let it grow, and then, you completely end up filling in your trench. But it's a good idea to not, fill it all at once, to make sure that it doesn't just sit in there and rot. So,
I love the look of it. I just think it's the neatest looking thing. But I tell you, for me, it takes up a lot of room for the amount of food you get.
It does.
And unless you want to have an asparagus garden, or you have a really big garden, you might want to think about that and kind of research how much asparagus do you get for the amount of space it takes. That was surprising
true.
To me.
It's true. Which is why I don't grow them anymore, because
same here.
I decided that I wanted to have that space devoted to something else. But for folks who have, a space for it, I did love it when I had my own homegrown asparagus. It was really fun. The one thing you do need to make sure is that you order or go to a nursery that can get it for you, the right kind of asparagus, because a lot of asparagus need cold winters, and we don't have those. But the University of California, bless them, has developed hybrids that take warmer winters. And so you just need to make sure that you're getting the UC, something that says UC in the name of the variety will be one that was developed for California. So just a little tip.
You know what we have not talked about, we only have a few more minutes, is pest control.
Oh, and that's a good one for February, because as the days get longer and it starts to warm up a little bit, the pests are going to go nuts. And they always, especially aphids, love new growth, right? So
they all come to my house.
No, half of them are here at my house, I think.
Okay, so we got Orange County covered.
Yeah. And then, of course, what never went away this year is I've had ant activity. Sometimes in the winter it slows down. It has not slowed down. How about you?
I don't really have ant problems.
I think Irvine's a giant ant hill.
It's an ant hill.
Yeah.
I go years without having ants.
Ugh. No, I have ants all the time. And so, yes, in February, do get out in your garden frequently. We like to say the best pest control is you, because it's your eyes that are going to spot problems, before they become overwhelming. Yeah.
If you could spot problems now, as soon as you see them and deal with them, it's so much easier. And I know, like me, like everybody else, it's not that bad, but it will be that bad.
And after we've had, rainy season, the snails proliferate in the spring. So as you're cleaning up, we've talked about pruning roses and other shrubs and cleaning up your perennials. That's the time to throw out snail bait. You've picked up all of those hiding places, thrown away that garden debris, and then toss some snail bait out and keep them from getting out of control. And with the aphids, just keep an eye on that new growth. As soon as you see them, hose them off with a strong jet of water, or use some insecticidal soap. And if you did do the pruning of your roses and sprayed with the dormant spray, you should have a lot less pests than you might otherwise have. But yeah, just keep an eye out for them. Keep it under control.
I know when I've gone on vacation and come back and it's out of control, It is just a pain. I mean, it just takes so much more work when it gets to be such a to a point where it's bad.
Right.
Versus, oh, and sometimes, you know, we say, oh, it's not that bad. I got other things to do. But really, you need to put that on the top of your priority so it doesn't become a big project.
Yeah, one of the things I do if I'm expecting pests is I...
Sounds like they're coming to visit.
Expecting them for dinner. They are. They are always coming for dinner. Is I'll go ahead and before I even go out in the garden, I just get my little hand sprayer and mix up some insecticidal soap. And that way, it's just there, you know, like my little garden toolkit. Mm-hmm. When I'm walking around the garden doing stuff, if I see aphids, I can just, you know, do a couple pumps and spray that insecticidal soap right away. But I find if I get out in the garden and I'm in the middle of tasks, and then I don't want to stop to go mix stuff up.
I'm right there with you.
And if you have a small yard, you can just buy it ready mixed, and then it's super easy to spray, and you can just grab your ready mix spray. But my garden's so big that I usually do a little mix.
You'd have to take a second mortgage out.
Yeah, exactly, to buy those. And plus, you know, then it's all that plastic waste, you know, with the empty bottles. So I do try to mix it up myself in my yard. But if you're not used to doing that, you can certainly buy it.
Well, Tina, we have a couple minutes left. What would you like to finish up on?
I think that February, which also contains Valentine's Day, is also a fun time to, especially if you have kids, and to get them away from perhaps materialism, to do a little garden project for them to give to a gift as a gift, you know, to grandma or a favorite aunt, or you know their parents. But if you take them to the nursery and let them pick out a 6-pack of flowers or some herbs, and then we all have random pots at home, pretty much, and you give them, you know, a pot and let them choose what to plant in a pot, and then find a nice spool of ribbon and let them choose a ribbon to tie around it. I think that that's a really fun way for kids to give something of themselves, introduce them to gardening. Yeah. Yeah.
Very sweet. Get them connected to nature.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
We're so much on our phones and other things, electronics, so get them connected to nature. And you know, I don't know about you, but stuff when I learned when I was little, you take with you for the rest of your life. And it's so much easier to teach a kid this now than when they're 30.
Absolutely.
You know, they have no appreciation of it at that point in time, but the wonderment of it and making something special, and they get to use their hands and their brains and think about it and their creativity. What a great idea, Tina.
Yeah, put them outside, you know. Let them do it on the patio. They're out in the fresh air. They're away from electronics. And they love to get dirty.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's nothing better than a bag of potting soil and a kid and some flowers or you know, veggies for them to... You know, let them pick their favorite to plant. Or like you said, seeds. You know, let them plant some seeds. Lettuce seeds in a pot, a wide, shallow pot. And they can give their, you know, mom or grandma a salad bowl, right? And they can watch together as the seeds sprout. There's lots of fun things to do with them.
Well, with that, I think we're going to sign off for this month.
Another
hour goes by.
And happy Valentine's Day.
Yes, happy planting, happy Valentine's Day, and happy gardening.